Hello, I'm Christine, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 9th of July, 2025. Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading for you this week, we have myself, Christine, Angela, Ian, Helen, Mohammed, Mina, Simon, and not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Mohammed. From Black Country Day to racing pigeons losing their way, we have some fascinating news and information from the Black Country. And with news of a local butcher winning a prestigious award, we've also got another cook-along session from blind baker Penny Melville Brown. We hit the tracks again as we continue our train spotting adventure with Talking News contributor and railway enthusiast David Smith. After a devastating week in the footballing world, we pay tribute to former Wolves frontman and fans' favourite Diogo Jota, who tragically passed away at the age of 28. You'll have to be sharp of mind as well, as we have another challenging quiz from Roger and Mina. Mina also brings us the forecast for the week ahead. Is another mini heatwave on its way? With the prospect of further prolonged spells of summer sunshine on its way, in a continuation of our special focus from last week, let's begin with Angela as we look at how to protect our eyes from the sun.
You may recall in last week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we focused on how the summer sunshine and mini heatwaves we've been experiencing can affect our eye health with eye conditions such as dry eye. Well, this week, we continue that focus after a local grandmother developed sun damage to her eyes, an infection and shingles after falling asleep in the sun. Retiree Jean Hill, 67, brought out her garden deck chair to sit reading in the sun at her home in Kidderminster, Worcestershire, for a short while in May, when temperatures hit the late 20s. The grandmother of two then lay on her sunbed for a quick rest and fell asleep for 10 or 15 minutes, during which time her sunglasses fell off her face. She woke up and continued her day, but when she arose the next morning, her eye was swollen shut and blistered with white spots. Jean was in agonising pain and couldn't open one eye, and doctors revealed, despite wearing factor 30 sun cream, she had developed sun poisoning, a form of severe sunburn. Worse still, it had weakened her immune system to the point that she had developed shingles, a painful and itchy rash caused by an infection, which can also cause temperatures and nausea. Despite being prescribed medications, nearly 2 months on, Jean says her face is still sore and painful. Jean was given antiviral tablets to treat the shingles along with other treatments and was told to return in 2 weeks. When she did, she was given another supply plus antibiotics, and she was still suffering with the effects. She said, "I didn't go out for weeks, and I had to wear sunglasses or close the curtains because my eyes were sensitive to the light. I'm still on medication now. I've still got blisters under my brows, and my forehead is inflamed. I have nerve tablets for the pain and eye drops and night cream to soothe it, but it's still really painful. I feel like banging my head against the wall. The corner of my eye is the worst." Jean's doctors have reassured her the condition will eventually heal, but she wants to warn people to be aware of how much damage the sun can do, even if only exposed for a short time. Jean reckons the issue began when her glasses fell off her face as she napped, and her eyes were exposed to high UV, even though her eyes were shut. She said, "There are people who go out not wearing sunglasses or a hat and lie on the beach with no sun cream on. I was careful and this happened to me. They don't realise the danger. I never dreamt anything like this could or would happen. I don't want it to happen to anyone else." So, how does the sun affect your eyes? And more importantly, how can we protect our eyes from the sun? With thanks to information from the RNIB, here's Christine and Ian, who can tell us more.
How the sun affects your eyes. We need light to see what's around us and to see colour. Light from the sun contains invisible UVA and UVB rays, which can hurt your skin and your eyes. UVA and UVB are types of harmful ultraviolet UV light. We protect our skin from this harmful UV light with sunscreen, which helps prevent sunburn. Because our eyes need light to work properly, UV light from the sun also enters our eyes. Much of the UV light is absorbed by the structures of the eye without any damage. However, harmful UV light can hurt your eyes and may increase your risk of developing an eye condition.
Why do I need to protect my eyes from the sun? It's important to protect your eyes from harmful UV light. Harmful UV light from the sun may increase your risk of some eye conditions, in particular cataracts. A cataract is a clouding of the lens inside your eye, which makes your sight cloudy and misty. We all know that we must protect our skin from UV light, but it is just as important to protect your eyes too. Adults and children should have sunglasses that include a UV filter to reduce the risks of longer-term eye health issues, says Dr. Louise Gao, Head of Eye Health, Optometry and Low Vision at RNIB.
Five top tips to protect your eyes from the sun. Here are our top tips to help you keep your eyes safe from the sun all year round. Wear sunglasses. Sunglasses can protect your eyes from harmful UV light. They reduce the amount of UV light that enters your eyes, so your eyes are protected from the sun and your vision is more comfortable. When you're buying sunglasses, check they have the CE quality mark or British standard BSEN ISO 12312-1. This means they have adequate protection from UV light. This information is printed on the inside of the arms of sunglasses. Sunglasses can also help if you're light sensitive or have problems with glare. They come in a range of tints. The lightness or darkness and colour of the tint is largely a matter of personal choice. Darker lenses don't always offer more protection, just as lighter lenses don't always offer less. If you're not sure, ask your optician. When you're looking for sunglasses, here are our top tips to help you find the perfect pair. Choose a protective style. Bigger lenses give your eyes more protection, so it's a good idea to choose sunglasses the largest lens that fits your face comfortably. Wraparound styles also help block harmful UV light from entering from the sides. Cost doesn't mean protection. Sunglasses don't have to be expensive to protect your eyes. A cheap pair of sunglasses with UV protection and a CE or UKCA is better than the expensive or designer pair of sunglasses without. Choose sunglasses to fit your lifestyle. Whether you're after a stylish pair of sunglasses to take on holiday or a practical pair for everyday wear, it's important to choose sunglasses that work for you and that you want to wear.
Check your glasses or contact lenses have a UV filter. Even when it's cloudy outside, harmful UV light from the sun can still damage your eyes. The best way to protect your eyes from this damage is with a UV filter. This stops most of the harmful light entering your eyes. Most prescription glasses come with a built-in clear UV filter. If you wear glasses, it's a good idea to check they include a UV filter. If you're not sure, ask your optician, also called an optometrist. Many brands of contact lenses also have UV protection as standard, and you can check this with your optician.
Consider eye shields. Like sunglasses, eye shields reduce the amount of UV light that enters your eyes. They are larger than normal glasses and stop light from entering from above and from the side. This increased protection can be particularly helpful if you suffer with glare. They are available in a range of different tints and colour filters, which can help to increase contrast and definition. It's a good idea to try eye shields on in the environment you plan to use them, to find the option that works best for you. Eye shields should be fitted correctly to stop light coming in from the edges of the frame. If you need help, contact your optician. Glare shields that fit over prescription glasses are also available. If you wear glasses and struggle with glare, these may help.
Take care outdoors. If you spend a lot of time outdoors, your eyes may need more protection. For example, if your job involves being outdoors or if you enjoy outdoor hobbies. Your eyes are also exposed to more UV light when there are more reflective surfaces around, such as water. It's a good idea to protect your eyes if you're at the beach, fishing, boating, or on holiday. Snow also reflects UV light, and stronger protection is needed if you're spending time in the snow. For example, if you're skiing or snowboarding. When looking for protective eyewear, such as goggles, for these sports, it's important to check they also offer adequate UV protection.
Be safe in the sun. Sunglasses are the easiest way to protect your eyes from harmful UV light, but it's also a good idea to practice good sun safety every day, whether it's sunny or overcast. Remember to never look directly at the sun. Wear a wide-brimmed hat together with your sunglasses. Hats provide extra shade and protection for your eyes. It's a good idea to check the weather forecast before you go out so you don't get caught out on sunny days or when you're on holiday. Spend time in the shade. Whether you're relaxing by the pool or enjoying a family lunch in your garden, spending time in the shade can add another layer of protection for your eyes.
How to protect your child's eyes from the sun. Protect your child's eyes and their vision in the sun. Children are more sensitive to UV light because they have larger pupils, black circle in the middle of your eye that lets light in, and clear young lenses, the structure that sits behind the pupil and bends and focuses light to help you see clearly. This combination means they absorb much more UV light than adults. Here are our top tips to help you look after your child's eyes in the sun. Wear a hat with a wide brim. The NHS recommends children wear a hat that shades the face, neck, and ears. Tell your child to never look directly at the sun. Wear sunglasses that filter out harmful UV light. Children's sunglasses are available in a range of styles to suit all ages, from tiny tots to teens. Always check for the CE quality mark or British standard. Stay in the shade or indoors when the sun is strongest, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Now, many of us may or know someone who may be experiencing symptoms and effects of age-related macular degeneration, ARMD. And tributes are being paid to one of the world's top eye researchers, Professor Pete Coffey, who sadly passed away after a long illness. Renowned for leading research into a breakthrough treatment to help restore sight in people with age-related macular degeneration, his work will continue to influence future developments in eye research and stem cell therapy. Professor Coffey was widely recognised for his work to develop a stem cell therapy to treat AMD using retinal pigment epithelial cells. In 2008, the Macular Society supported his promising research with a grant of £100,000. This project went on to become the London Project to Cure Blindness. That early investment laid the foundation for a major clinical trial that went on to demonstrate, for the first time, that stem cell treatment could successfully restore sight in people with wet AMD. The London Project to Cure Blindness, which was funded by the Macular Society in 2008, is a partnership between Professor Pete Coffey from UCL and Professor Lyndon de Kruth, retinal surgeon at Moorfields Eye Hospital. The project was supported by the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology and the National Institute for Health Research, Moorfields Biomedical Research Centre. The project started when researchers wanted to see if they could improve vision for people with sudden severe visual loss caused by wet AMD by replacing the diseased cells at the back of the patient's affected eye using a stem cell-based treatment. In March 2018, it was reported that the first patients to receive a new treatment derived from stem cells for people with wet AMD had gone from not being able to read at all, even with glasses, to reading 60 to 80 words per minute with normal reading glasses. Dr. Amanda Carr, who worked closely with Professor Coffey at the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology from the early stages of the London project, said, "We are deeply saddened to share the news of the passing of Professor Peter Coffey, a true pioneer who led groundbreaking stem cell trials for age-related macular degeneration." She described him as bold and collaborative and said he was dedicated to finding a cure for sight loss by developing a cell therapy for AMD using retinal pigment epithelial cells. She said, "He worked with his end point in mind, assembling a multidisciplinary team and uniting people from across the globe to make it a reality. It was a bold, collaborative approach that exemplified his ability to bring people together to translate cutting-edge science into meaningful treatment for patients. His contributions will leave a lasting impact on the regenerative medicine community and the development of new treatments for macular disease. Work that has brought real hope to so many." Despite his many achievements as a world-renowned researcher, Pete remained incredibly modest and deeply generous with his time and knowledge, she said. "He had a gift for recognising people's strengths and helping them to grow into the best version of themselves." She added, "He was the most inspiring boss, colleague and mentor, someone who built a team filled with brilliant people, great warmth and much laughter. Working with him was an absolute joy. We have lost a dear friend and colleague, and we will miss him beyond words." Professor Coffey's legacy will live on through the continuing work of the London Project to Cure Blindness and the many scientists he inspired. His groundbreaking research has brought hope to millions of people affected by AMD, and he will continue to positively shape the future of eye health.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Beacon Update. It's Mohammed here with all the latest from everything that's been happening at Beacon. Summit for Sight. This July, the amazing Sohota family will be taking on the mighty Snowden, all to raise money for Beacon Centre for the Blind and in memory of Lyndon, a much-loved member of our community, who lived with sight loss and attended Beacon. They're pushing themselves as a family, and that includes their youngest climber, just 8 years old. They're aiming to raise £150 to mark Beacon's 150th birthday, and every pound raised will help us to continue supporting people living with sight loss. Let's cheer them on and help them reach the summit and their fundraising goal. www.justgiving.com/campaigns/summit for Beacon. Hats off to our fabulous members. To mark the recent Ascot celebrations, we got crafty and the results were absolutely show-stopping. Our members let their imaginations run wild, creating their own race-themed hats. Every creation was a winner. A big shout out to Sue, one of Beacon's fantastic volunteers. Sue gives her time and energy to support our new boutique at Pattingham. We couldn't be more grateful. Yesterday, Sue went above and beyond, helping to promote the boutique at the Pattingham Fete. Her enthusiasm and support makes a real difference, and we just want to say a huge thank you. Great job, Sue. We appreciate it. Now, from one Sue to another, a massive congratulations to Sue, one of our amazing Bilston charity shop volunteers. She literally went above and beyond by taking on the skydive and making the big leap for Beacon. Sue has already raised an incredible £95, and there's still time to show your support. Donate at skydiveforbeacon.justgiving. If you're feeling inspired and want to take on a challenge for Beacon as we celebrate our 150th year, we'd love to hear from you. Get in touch with us. Support us at beaconvision.org.
That's it for this week's Beacon Update. Join me again next week, where I will have more from across the charity.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news. And up first, we hear from Christine.
People are being encouraged to share their views as the City of Wolverhampton Council recommissions local specialist domestic abuse support services. The council wants to hear from local residents, people affected by domestic abuse, and professionals from across Wolverhampton to help shape priorities and intentions for the new services to ensure they are effective, accessible, and respond to local need. Domestic abuse specialist support services provide victims of domestic abuse with practical help, advice, and guidance. In Wolverhampton, support is available to women, men, and children who are either living in the community or in accommodation such as a refuge. The types of support that may be offered can include safe accommodation, support through the criminal justice system, financial, legal, or housing advice, counselling or therapy, and emotional and peer support. Councillor Obeida Ahmed, Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, said, "This is an important piece of work which will help to ensure that Wolverhampton continues to deliver high-quality domestic abuse support services. By completing a short survey, you can help us develop services that respond to victims of domestic abuse sensitively and effectively and meet the needs of local residents. This is a public consultation, and we would welcome responses from as many people as possible, so please take a few moments to have your say. The consultation is available at the Future of Wolverhampton's Specialist Domestic Abuse Services, Have Your Say, until midnight on Sunday, 3rd of August, 2025.
And speaking about one of its recently introduced services, Wolverhampton Council said its trial of new technology to help meet the needs of the over 65s and disabled people has been met with a positive response from the public. The Council has been working with technology provider WM5G and West Midlands Combined Authority to look at how care needs may be met in future. Voice-activated devices, including video care phones, internet speakers and smoke alarms, formed part of the trial, which received funding from the Department for Science and Technology. Residents also used digital pendants, which can pinpoint their location to help keep them safe at home and when out and about, being able to detect if they suffer a fall and provide direct communication with emergency support. Wolverhampton resident Carol, who has vascular dementia, was among the participants supported by WM5G digital care navigators and her daughter Caroline. She said, "This technology is like having a friend. I don't feel alone, I feel safe, and that has given me a lot of confidence both in and out of the house." Daughter Caroline added, "Mum is of a generation where technology is not really their thing at all, but this is easy to use, and the support team have been brilliant talking her through it. It has been very beneficial and reassuring for us." Councillor Paula Brookfield, Cabinet Member for Adults, said, "While we are in the early stages of understanding the potential of this technology, it can help make a positive difference, providing tailored packages, optimizing carer visits, and delaying the need for additional care. More than 301 referrals have been made in Wolverhampton alone since the start of the project in September 2024, with more than 2,500 pieces of equipment deployed to support independent living. Findings from the project will be used to analyse the case for development of the equipment in future."
Time now for some broader news which may affect our ability to access tech, such as the daily living and mobility aids we've just heard about, as the Royal National Institute of Blind People has called last-minute concessions on the Universal Credit and Personal Independence Payment Bill a huge victory for the blind and partially sighted people. The Welfare Reform Bill passed its second reading in the House of Commons on Tuesday night, the 1st of July, with 335 to 260 votes. The RNIB has previously called for MPs to vote against the bill, citing concern that it would create an unjust two-tiered health and disability benefit system. Further concessions were made on the eve of the vote, including agreeing to a review of the proposed changes to personal independent payments, PIP, before they are implemented. Potential changes to PIP, which will now be reviewed, include tighter restrictions for those applying for support from 2027, something which the RNIB has called unacceptable. Vivian Francis, RNIB's Chief Strategy and Public Affairs Officer, said, "This has been a huge victory for the blind and partially sighted people who have campaigned bravely alongside the disabled community to protect the vital PIP payments that often cover crucial costs, care allowances and assistive technology. Many blind and partially sighted people have shared stories of trying to cover monthly bills in the midst of an economic crisis and have helped persuade MPs to reject these potentially disastrous changes," Francis said. She added, "While our preference was for this bill to be dropped altogether, the fact that such a major last-minute concession was made is indicative of the need to listen far, far earlier and far more intently to disabled people. RNIB vows to play a robust part in the forthcoming review of the PIP assessment alongside blind and partially sighted people to ensure their needs are heard and acted upon, although it remains to be seen what the status of that review will be in practice." Francis emphasised that, "At the same time as addressing changes to welfare, we need to see much more detail on the government's plan for promised employment support and urgent action to fix the broken access to work scheme so that many more blind and partially sighted people can gain paid employment."
Now it's time to test your knowledge. Here come the quiz questions for this edition, and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. In what year did Wimbledon change the colour of their tennis balls from white to yellow? Question 2. How much food is estimated to be wasted worldwide? Question 3. What grows faster during pregnancy? Question 4. What is the Christian or first name of the man whose design is known as the Gruen transfer? Question 5. What metal is considered to disinfect? And finally, question 6. What sticky treat was invented in 1897? I will be back with you with the answers later, but for now, best of luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news. A series of free family fun days will take place across the city this summer to encourage everyone to love their community. The Love Your Community Fun Days will be taking place at suspended for Dovecote's TMO on Wednesday the 30th of July, the Canop Pro Gurdwara on Thursday the 7th of August, Lanesfield Church on Wednesday the 13th of August, and St Joseph's Church, Colway Road, on Wednesday the 20th of August. Each will run from 11am to 3pm and all are welcome. Partners including the City of Wolverhampton Council, community organisations and charities, the police and other service providers will be on hand to provide a day of enjoyment, well-being and practical support for people of all ages across four distinct zones. The Kids and Family Zone will include a bouncy castle and physical play, face painting, henna art and craft activities, while the Wellbeing Zone will offer a calm and supportive environment, providing information and advice from partners like Rethink and the NHS, as well as mindfulness sessions and journaling activities designed to promote self-care and reflection. Elsewhere, the Advice and Support Zone will offer residents financial tips, energy efficiency guidance and support with managing household budgets, along with gardening workshops to encourage sustainable living and community greening. And the Sport and Physical Activity Zone will feature kickabouts with Walls Foundation, calisthenics demonstrations, interactive sessions led by WV Active, and appearances by Wolves mascot Wolfie and Wendy. Visitors will also be encouraged to contribute to the Love Your Community Wall, sharing what they value about their neighbourhood, contributing ideas for local improvements, and making a pledge to support positive change in their community. Councillor Obaida Ahmed, Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, said, "These Love Your Community events will bring residents together for fun, connection and support. They are a great chance for people to find out more about what's going on locally, discover services that can make their lives easier, and share their ideas to improve their neighbourhood. The Love Your Community initiative is designed to empower and encourage people to take pride in their local area through community events, shared spaces, support networks, and inclusive activities. This is important because we know that when residents feel seen, heard, and included, their neighbourhoods flourish, and so does our city. So please come along, join the fun, and help shape the future of your community." And the Mayor of Dudley has called on residents to celebrate who they are and where they come from as the Black Country Festival kicks into gear this weekend. The festival runs through July and is this year's celebrating its 11th anniversary. The Black Country Music Festival takes place in the courtyard at Himley Holland Park on Saturday, July the 12th, with a family fun day at Stevens Park in Quarry Bank on Sunday, July the 13th. Councillor Pete Lee, the Mayor of Dudley, said, "The Black Country Festival is a wonderful opportunity to celebrate who we are and where we come from. I'm a proud Black Countryman myself, so I'm looking forward to attending as many of the events as I can and joining the celebrations. There's loads on throughout July, and many of the events will be free of charge to attend, helping more people to join in with the fun. I hope that our borough residents will continue to show the fantastic support that has allowed the festival to reach its 11th year. For a full list of events, visit the Black Country Festival website."
Now then, someone who knows all about our railway systems is of course our extremely knowledgeable and valued contributor to the Talking News, railway enthusiast and big member David Smith. And in an extension to our Round the Reekin series, we shall be hearing more from David, learning all about how his enthusiasm for the railway system came about and despite challenges faced, how he still enjoys it to this day. So, without further ado, it's time once more to go train spotting.
The following article I'm going to read, I actually wrote it in April 2013. I hope you enjoy it. The Class 50 English Electric 2700 horsepower diesel locomotive. Production of the Class 50 locomotive commenced in 1967, with the first locomotive entering service in 1968. All 50 locomotives were in service by the end of the year. On entering service, they were put to work on London, Euston, Glasgow trains, which they worked north from Crewe. At this time, electrification of the West Coast Main Line to Glasgow had only been completed as far as Crewe, although the lines to Manchester and Liverpool were electrified. The Class 50s worked mainly in pairs due to the fact that between Crewe and Glasgow, there are many steep gradients. The Class had a maximum speed of 100 miles per hour, but were capable of exceeding this. The locomotives worked on the Crewe-Glasgow services until 1974, when electrification from Crewe to Glasgow was complete. The locomotives were then transferred to the Western Region to work the London, Paddington, Plymouth, Penzance and Bristol services, which enabled many of the diesel hydraulic locomotives of classes 35, 42 and 52 to be withdrawn. In 1976, the first of the Intercity 125 high-speed trains were introduced on the Western Region, and by February 1977, all the diesel hydraulics had been withdrawn. The 50s could be found on other services such as London Paddington to Liverpool trains, which they worked as far as Birmingham New Street. In later years, the 50s were employed on the London Waterloo to Exeter services, and in 1987, the first of the Class was withdrawn, and by 1992, all members of the Class had been withdrawn. When introduced, the Class 50s carried the following number series: D400 to D449, and were all allocated to Crewe Diesel Depot and were renumbered under the top scheme as 50001 to 50050. And when transferred to the Western Region, the majority of the Class was allocated to Plymouth, with the remainder being based at Bristol Bath Road and London Old Oak Common. The locomotives carried blue livery with full yellow ends from new. The whole fleet were named in 1978-79, with some locos being renamed. A couple of examples are as follows: 50001 Dreadnought, 50017 Royal Oak, and 50030 Repulse. More than 10 Class 50s have been purchased by preservationists, so hopefully the sight and sound of these English electric locomotives can be enjoyed for many years to come.
Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. It's all yours, Roger. Take it away.
Hello again, everyone. Well, June is over. Would you believe it? And haven't we had some lovely weather? It's been too hot for me at times, but never mind, eh? So let's just enjoy the summer and pin back your lug holes for this week's interesting items. Now then, as Wimbledon is well underway, did you know that during Wimbledon fortnight, they get through 191,900 strawberries, 18,100 portions of fish and chips, 276,000 glasses of Pimm's, 22,000 bottles of champagne, and 65,000 ice creams. They will also use nearly 55,000 tennis balls, which changed from white ones to yellow ones in 1986, and the loudest grunt ever recorded was made by Maria Sharapova of 109 decibels, which is the same as that made by an accelerating motorbike. And of course, we're all aware that food waste is a huge problem, but how big is it? About 931 million metric tons. That's how much food waste that researchers with the United Nations estimate was wasted in 2019. According to the Food Waste Index report of 2021, it surveyed 54 countries. It found that the majority of food wasted, which is 61%, comes from homes, while restaurants and other food services produce 26% waste and a grocery store just 13% waste. And a surprising side effect of pregnancy is that nails and hair grow faster than usual. This is due to the changes in hormones as well as increased blood circulation and metabolism, supplying nutrients during pregnancy. Also, a person's hair might feel thicker and look more shiny and healthy than usual, though it can occasionally mean that the expectant mother may suddenly sprout strands of less preferred places. And did you know that there's a deliberate sneaky strategy behind the design of shopping malls? Well, there is. It's officially called the Gruen transfer. This phenomenon was named after Australian architect Victor Gruen, who identified how an intentionally confusing layout could lead to consumers spending more time and money in a shopping venue. Well, at least I know why I get lost up Mary Hill. And did you know that copper doorknobs are self-disinfecting? Copper and its alloys, such as brass, have long been popular materials for manufacturing doorknobs. It turns out that this may not just be because the metal's hue makes it look nice. In fact, the material has been found to kill the bacteria that linger on the hands. Candy floss was invented by a dentist, would you believe? In 1897, William Morrison teamed up with John Wharton to create the cotton candy machine. His fluffy stuff has been enjoyed by kids worldwide and no doubt has also helped in create cavities in kids' teeth. Well, there you are then. That's the end of this week's Fountain of Wisdom. But if you're like me, I do feel a bit more knowledgeable in finding out these items for us. But I don't think that I will necessarily feel any wiser. I shall go away now and ponder on that lot for a while. Well, at least, until I've enjoyed my cuppa and finished my Kit Kat that I've had in the fridge. So, until next week then, I'll just say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
After a devastating week in the footballing world, we pay tribute to former Wolves frontman and fans' favourite Diogo Jota, who tragically passed away at the age of 28.
The football world was left stunned last Thursday after Diogo Jota, who lit up Molineux during his three-year spell at the club before moving to Liverpool, lost his life alongside his brother André Silva during a car crash in Spain in the early hours of Thursday morning. On Saturday, players from both Liverpool and Wolves paid their respects at the funeral at the Igreja Matriz de Gondomar in São Cosme. Wolves captain Nelson Semedo and José Sá were at the service, while Ruben Neves was one of those carrying Jota's coffin. Former manager Nuno Espirito Santo, João Moutinho and Rui Patricio, who played with Jota for Wolves, and the Portugal national team, were also in attendance. Elsewhere, tributes have flooded in from around the world for the former Wolves frontman. Jota, 28, a father of three, who married his long-term partner Ruta Cardoso 11 days before the incident. Poignantly, Saturday also saw Wolves share a moving tribute video dedicated to former fan favourite Diogo Jota. The Premier League club posted a video more than 5 minutes in length celebrating his highlights with the club and narrated mostly by old comments from him. Fans on social media praised a beautiful tribute, but are asking the club to go one step further and retire the number 18 shirt, which he wore for three seasons at Molineux. Jota joined Wolves on loan from Atletico Madrid in 2017 and helped them win the championship title before spending another two full seasons with them permanently. He became a modern hero for the Midland side, breaking numerous records before his £41 million move to Liverpool in 2020, where he went on to win the Premier League. Jota scored 44 goals across the three seasons with the Molineux club, winning the championship title and reaching the quarter-finals of the Europa League. Jota scored back-to-back hat-tricks against Beşiktaş and Espanyol at Molineux in the Europa League, becoming the club's first player to do that. That three-goal salvo against Beşiktaş came in 11 minutes, the club's quickest ever European hat-trick. It was testament to his determination to play in England that Jota swapped Champions League football with Atletico for the championship. The Portuguese scored 18 goals in his first season with the club, being named their top scorer and establishing himself as a much-loved star. Wolves' video was captioned simply but sweetly, "You made us happy, Diogo. We will never forget you." The clip traces right from Jota's first day at the training ground, holding up the shirt and giving his first interview to fans, all the way through to their championship title celebrations, Premier League highs, and his final days at the club. right on brand for a man who was widely known for being devoted to his family. One of the interviews included features Jota talking about his loved ones. "My family, my parents always support me," the forward can be heard saying. "They better understand my position. They are always supportive and that's what I care about." He added, "It was not an easy decision, joining Wolves. Many people talked about me destroying my career because it was two or three steps down. I felt that if I came there and did good things, it would be a step back to go in front. And I'm very proud to make that decision and do good things with this club." At the end of the video, Wolves show a picture of Jota and his brother André Silva, who died alongside him in the early hours of Thursday morning after their car accident.
Former Wolves captain Connor Cody labelled Diogo Jota the heart and soul of the dressing room after his former Wolves teammate's tragic death. Cody was Molineux's skipper during Portuguese star Jota's three seasons at Wolves and also said the forward was born to play in the Premier League. "I think we'll all remember where we were, but it goes bigger than football what we're all feeling now," Cody told BBC Sport. "This has hit everybody hard. And it will hit everybody hard for a long, long time because Diogo was a fantastic human being, an amazing friend, an amazing husband, an amazing father, and an absolutely incredible footballer for all the clubs he's played for. He was an unbelievable person. This is celebrating an incredible human being who should never have left us this early, and this early into an amazing career." Cody, 32 and now of Leicester City, added, "You could see it in his first session. That tenacity and the will to win was like no other. He was the heart and soul of the dressing room. He had a quiet way of going about himself, but you knew you could go to him about anything. For me, as a captain, it was an honour and a dream to play with him."
Time now to head over to our football fan zone, where Wolves supporter Jamie has paid tribute, saying the tragic loss of Diogo Jota has hit hard. "It is absolutely devastating and will take a long time to get over. It was an honour and an absolute privilege to watch Diogo Jota not just play but grow into an absolutely amazing footballer and individual too." And Wolves superfan Fraser also paid his own heartfelt respects by visiting the Billy Wright statue outside Molineux, where Old Gold supporters have laid flowers, shirts and other tributes to remember the club's hugely popular attacker of 3 years, as well as his brother André.
"So I've just laid some flowers on the floor for Diogo Jota, and it made me feel quite upset and in loving memory of him and stuff. And we're just standing outside now, thinking of what his three lads are going to do without him."
"Very sad, isn't it?"
"Yeah, very sad. So we've just walked away from where all the flowers have been put. It's a really, really sad time, no tearing. No, nothing. All I can hear is my cane going along the ground in the cars. Because it's all just a sad time because Diogo Jota's died. And somebody's put a banner saying, 'Once a wolf and he's still a wolf.' And I thought that was really nice. So, I'm just very upset about it."
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. I hope you all have been enjoying cooler and little more comfortable days of weather this week. With the weather map set to turn red again, things are set to heat up as we move into next week. The higher UV levels shall remain, so do take care and continue taking the necessary precautions
as the prolonged sunshine should see levels peak to high this week. The sunrise and sunset times are 5:05 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:25 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, it is looking dry, warm and sunny for both Friday 11th and the weekend of 12th and the 13th of July. With sunny intervals throughout the day, temperatures shall sizzle at a scorchingly high 31 degrees across Friday and the weekend. Hopefully, the gentle southwesterly breeze may provide some pleasant and refreshing relief. Moving into next week and it's remaining just as bright and cheery, but baking hot with plenty of sunshine forecast to continue right through the week from Monday 14th of July to Thursday 17th of July. However, a westerly breeze should set in as we move into Tuesday, bringing with it more noticeable cloud cover. With this, the summer sunshine is expected to be more intermittent, which should help temperatures step down to something more comfortable at 24 degrees. So it does look like we are set for another week of summer sunshine. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. In what year did Wimbledon change the colour of their tennis balls from white to yellow? And the answer is 1986. Question 2. How much food is estimated to be wasted worldwide? And the answer here is 931 million metric tons. Question 3. What grows faster during pregnancy? And the answer here is hair and nails. Question 4. What is the Christian name or first name of the man who designed known as the Gruen transfer? And the answer here is Victor. Question 5. What metal is considered to disinfect? And the answer is copper and its alloys. And finally, question 6. What sticky treat was invented in 1897? And the answer, of course, here is candy floss. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
Delighted staff at Essington Farm near Wolverhampton have been praised for serving up an excellent customer service welcome at a prestigious award ceremony. Essington Farm won the Best Large Butchery Trophy at the inaugural National Craft Butchers British Butchery Awards after being visited by a mystery shopper who was thrilled with the counter service and the quality of the meat on display. Butchery apprentice Tom Buxton, aged 25, of Coven, says, "We've won the award for large butchery for the Midlands and we're pretty proud, really. It's from the National Craft Butchery and they judge butcher shops around the country in the different categories and then they judge the best butcher shop at the categories. We served a mystery shopper. We don't know when that was and they judge the customer service and the quality of the meat and the other food. It feels overwhelming, really. This is the second time we've won such an award. It's down to the dedication of the whole team. We're all proud of each other because there's a lot of hard work that's gone into it. During the recent warm spell, the most popular products have included seasoned chicken legs, wings, mince, barbecue items, Moroccan lamb cutlets and tikka kebabs. The team includes butchers Richard East, Peter Thorpe, Tony Holt, Andy McLeod, Gareth Griffiths, Jack Weston, Josh Brown, along with counter assistants Sally Brassington, Tina Austin, Laura Bowden, Mick Davis, plus a part-time team. We're very grateful to all our customers. It's great that people support local British farming. We have plenty of regular customers along with seasonal visitors who come for strawberry and pumpkin picking once in a blue moon. We've also noticed in the hot weather, people are dropping in from the motorway network as we're about a half a mile from the M54 junction. The winning trophy was presented to farm operator Will Simpkin at a glittering ceremony at Nottingham Belfry on Monday. National Craft Butchers Director Eleanor O'Brien said, "This evening was a celebration of our industry's heart and soul, the people who make British butchery what it is. From time-honoured tradition to future-facing innovation, tonight's winners represent the very best of our craft. We're proud to bring the butchery community together under one roof for a night that honours our shared values of skill, pride and quality. The British Butchery Awards are set to return in 2027. All this talk of barbecue items and seasoned meats has probably got our stomachs rumbling. Well, thankfully, up next, we have another cook-along session with Penny Melville Brown, the blind baker, who brings us a recipe for pork pies with an easy hot water crust pastry. Now that sounds like some Boston fiddle.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, I'm Penny Melville Brown, the blind baker. I won an international prize that enabled me to cook all round the world. I've written all the recipes up, I've made hundreds of videos, and I blog and write about recipes all the time. There's even a cookbook. You can find out more about me at www.pennymelvillebrown.com. Hello, everyone. This is Penny Melville Brown again, and I'm going to share with you one of my favourite recipes. So today, these are homemade pork pies with hot water pastry, which I find is perfect for somebody like me who can't see, because the worst thing I need all over the kitchen is flour, and rolling out pastry with flour is a nightmare. So I love this pastry. I use it, and I'm going to show you how to make pork pies today, but I would also use it for baking blind. So if I wanted to make a fruit or a savoury tart, I would use it for that. You can use it for anything else you could use pastry for. Obviously, it's not ideal for a mince pies, but I have done it with mince pies and other things where you're looking for a puff, crunchy pastry. But this is an excellent pastry. It freezes beautifully. So when I'm making it, I would double these quantities that we're going to make today. Put half in a bag in the freezer. So I've got some to make use today, some to use on another day. It comes out of the freezer. It works beautifully every time. So this is a recipe that you really might want to think about and pursue, because I strongly recommend it. Okay, part of this, if you don't see, is you have to think about you're going to handle a pan or with hot water and lard. And for those of you who don't like lard, you can use another solid cooking fat, such as Trex. Other makes are available, of course. And you don't want this pan of hot water and lard hot. So what I would often do is start off, get this weighed out and heating, and all you're doing is melting the lard in the water, and then walk away, let it cool, get out the rest of your ingredients, prepare everything else. But you just want that cooling on top of the cooker until you're ready to use it. So let's start. I've got 100 milliliters of water. That will be 100 grams. And I'm a great fan of always weighing liquids. So I know 100 grams is 100 milliliters. And I listen to it, and I would put the water, the pan, on the scales, zero it, and then pour water in from a mug or something like that. So I've got exactly my 100 milliliters, my 100 grams of water in the pan. Then I can add the lard or the Trex or whatever in chunks until it gets up to 90 grams on the scales in the pan. and then the whole pan goes over onto the cooker and just starts on a gentle heat, melting. Now, I've talked to you before about my rock-hard fingertips. I would probably listen to it, feel it with a fingertip. You could go mad and use a wooden spoon, but just wait until it's melted. And even when it's starting to melt, you can switch the heat off straight away and just let it sit there and it will continue melting. So we've got all of that melting on the side, on the cooker, and then it'll cool down. Meanwhile, we need a nice glass bowl, wooden bowl, whatever sort of bowl you use for mixing. And into that, we're going to put the rest of our ingredients, which again are very simple. So we're going to start with 200 grams of ordinary plain flour. I'm also using 50 grams of strong white bread flour. Now, I use this bread flour for making bread, making soda bread, all sorts of other things. But it is worth having this flour around simply to make this pastry, because what you need is the extra gluten that will make it slightly stronger, crisper crust. I would use a flat teaspoonful of ground mace just thrown into the bowl. This adds a bit of the savouriness that we expect with pork pies, but it works equally well with a sweet pie. And you could obviously use other herbs and spices in this mix as well, or even a little sugar. And I have certainly made a sweet hot water pastry by adding a couple of teaspoonfuls of sugar. For this savoury one, I'm using a flat teaspoonful of salt, and then I'm going to put in 50 grams of butter. Ideally, you've taken it out of the fridge beforehand. It's sitting on the side, and you're just going to rub the butter, as you would for any normal pastry, into that flour and salt and your mace. Just rub it in so it feels like breadcrumbs. Then you make a well in the middle, and you spread it out and take your cooler pan of water and lard and pour it into the middle. And if you were using a wooden spoon before to test whether your lard was melted, now's the time to use that wooden spoon and just stir all that mixture together. And if the butter or the lard is still hot, it'll cool down as it hits all the flour. And then you can go in with your hands and you're going to end up with something that feels like Play-Doh, or for the older ones of us, plasticine. It's going to be a smooth dough that you can use as soon as it's cold. I would line tins with it, and it's really sensible to let it cool for a while, because if it's too soft, it will just creep down the sides of your tins like droopy knickers. So I prefer to get it a little bit cooler, and then you can mold it very, very thin. So much thinner than you would do with a rolling out an ordinary short crust pastry. So you can get it really thin pastry, and then it can sit there waiting for our filling. For these pork pies, I'm using like bun tins. So they've got straight sides up the edges. They're probably less than an inch deep. They're probably a couple of inches, not even that wide. And one of those filled with pastry, followed by the sausage meat, and then topped, is just delicious. So let's try the savoury pork pie version. I've got about 300 grams of sausage meat. Now, obviously, you can get sausages and squeeze them out. I go to my butcher and he will make sausage meat himself. He actually just chops the pork off the carcass, puts it through his mincer, puts in a bit of rusk. There it is, sausage meat. And I just buy big plastic tubes of it, and I keep that in the freezer until I want to make this recipe. So 300 grams of sausage meat, ground black pepper to taste, some salt. I would put in chopped fresh herbs, thyme, rosemary, whatever I've got around. What I definitely do is I would always put in the rind, the zest of a lemon. So I whizz it off with a zester, and then the juice of the lemon, which makes the mix a bit wetter, but it gives it a really good fresh flavour, particularly when you're thinking about all the fat in the sausage meat. The last thing I'm going to need, and this is not for using straight away, is one egg in a bowl beaten with a fork, or actually I beat it with the pastry brush. And that's going to be for brushing these pork pies before they go in the oven. So now we need to think about the oven, because we need to get that on. So I'm putting the oven on at 200 Celsius, about gas mark 6. I've already got my cases lined with pastry. I should have some pastry left over. And you probably need about a good walnut size to cover each of these pork pies. I fill each of the pork pies with that mix of sausage meat, cover it with the pastry. So literally, just as you would with Play-Doh, you press it out between finger and thumb, and then you put it on top of the little pork pie, squeeze around the edges, and you really don't need to do any more than just squeeze it together so you've got a nice seal. Then I would take a finger and push it into the middle, and you could be posh and use a knife because I want a steam hole in the middle. And then I brush with the beaten egg. What you don't want to do is get beaten egg into your hole. So you could do it the other way around. You could brush with beaten egg first and then put your hole in. But if you fill up your hole, then you're not going to get the steam out. So you repeat that across all your pork pies, and then they pop into the oven for about 10 minutes because you're just giving the pastry time to set, and then you need to make sure the pork in the middle is actually cooked properly. So then I reduce it to 140 degrees Celsius, which is much cooler, about gas mark 2, and I am going to now cook by temperature. So I take my trusty talking thermometer and I check that it gets to about 70 degrees Celsius in the middle of the sausage meat. That's going to take 20, 30 minutes, I would think. Depends how big you make them. So these pork pies, once they're cool, they'll ping out of that tray really well because you've got all that lard or Trex that will help them release nicely. I wrap mine in foil. Once they're cold, pop them in the freezer. They will last beautifully. They can come out and you can warm them up once they're defrosted in the oven. So you have hot pork pies and they are a revelation, just utterly delicious. Or you could take them on a picnic. They are great for traveling with. We often set off on a car journey and we've got a pork pie, bit of salad, and that's a really nice meal to have out. So I really recommend this pastry. Have a go at it. It's worth, you know, the bit of investment in the bread flour to try and get this pastry right. Enjoy it. I hope you enjoy this recipe. I hope you give it a try. If you've got ideas or suggestions for future recipes, please get in touch with me. You can always make contact through my website, www.pennymelvillebrown.com. And happy baking to all of you too. Bye-bye.
TNS Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!